Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Crossbar Live. Today is January 3rd, 2013, and you are listening to the very first episode of Off the Crossbar Live in the new year. Joining you, as always, I am your host for the evening, the man they call Crossbar, K. Ross Reed. And to my right, as always, the man between the pipes, the man they call Adam Orson Welles. Ooh, I like the gun show. How you doing, buddy?
Not too bad, man. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, and Happy New Year to everybody out there listening. I hope everybody had a safe and enjoyable holiday season, and now it is time to get back to the grind.
Indeed it is. So, wicked cold outside. New and exciting?
It is freezing outside right now. Anybody in the northern, eastern half of this continent can confirm. We're sitting currently at a projection of minus 22 degrees tonight. Great rink building weather.
Indeed it is. What does that translate to in American? Minus 22 is like, that's on the minus for them too, yeah? Never mind the math question. Yes.
I'm not ready for these questions.
On to the topic of rinks.
Yeah, we're going to, I think, lead off a little bit. We'll talk about the backyard rinks. Today we're going to take a look at World Junior Competition. Shocker going down in the wee hours of the morning today.
Can't believe I woke up for that.
I can't believe I didn't wake up for that. We're going to talk about the NHL lockout, of course. Staring down the barrel of hockey's last stand. Will we save a season? Will we not save a season? And in the event that we do save a season, we're going to have a little bit of home cooking on today's episode. We're going to talk about
cooking. Here?
Cookies. Absolutely.
No.
We're going to talk about the Montreal Canadiens lineup. We're going to look at the roster. We are just going to basically dig in and be self-indulgent assholes on today's show. I'm going for it. I haven't talked Habs in a long time. I want to talk Habs. I'm going to talk Habs.
Let's do it.
Because it's my show.
It is.
So in just a couple seconds here, we are going to get ready to go. Off the Crossbar. And I'd like to remind everyone that we are presented, of course, as always, by backsportspage.com and offthecrossbar.com.
Crossbar with the K.
Thank you very much. Before we're going to dig into some of this hockey stuff. Can't get there.
Well, okay, so it's minus 22. Which I have figured out, because I'm so brilliant at using Google. That's about minus 8 degrees on the Fahrenheit side, so it is pretty freaking cold.
Damn cold.
Most people would bundle up inside the house in a blanket and with their lovely lady friends, perhaps a mug of hot cocoa, something along those lines. Yet you've been spending a lot of time outside in this, relishing the cold.
I have spent the last 24 hours both perplexing and impressing my neighbors, depending on who walks by at any given moment. First, I should tell everybody about that monstrous snowfall. Big thank you to Sean the Murdertron McKenna for coming over and lending us the snowblower to get us out of not one, not two, but 3 feet of snow out of my entire backyard, able to finally clear out the rink. The boards are up. The tarps have been taped. The water has been laid down. We're very, very close to having the second annual Off the Crossbar home arena.
I look forward to it, man. I mean, this break between real hockey that we've been playing, you know, league hockey and everything like that, has gone on for a week and a half, and it would have been nice to have been playing. It's too bad the weather hadn't cooperated a little sooner, but it's coming along really nicely.
Yeah, it did take some time. Of course, you need consecutive days, usually, to get yourself started of minus 10 or colder on the Celsius scale, of course. And we have had that. So last night, minus 30, minus 34 with the wind chill. I did not one, not two, and again, three laps out there. Complete floodings. And the great thing about this weather is that you don't have to put the thin layers of mist on. You don't have to be out there all night. You freeze your knickerbockers off while you're out there. But you can get down to maybe 2.5 inches of water at a time and not have to worry about losing out or having that crusty, crappy surface dry out. Yeah. So we're seeing the deep spots fill up. I wish I had a level lawn. That would save me some time.
It would. We could just lay down the whole strip of concrete or asphalt next spring.
Mm, maybe we should have just cranked that snowblower up a little higher.
Yeah, just peel down
layers. Just chop. I mean, we're flinging dog turds into the neighbor's yard anyway, right?
That was awesome.
We might as well be flinging chunks of sod. All right, so yeah, we're probably 48 hours away from being able to skate on this rink if the weather holds up. If it somehow manages to climb up any warmer than -5, we may end up being in some trouble. But I think we'll be on it fairly shortly. And big news on our other hockey front, we're going to have the 3-on-3 team out to participate.
Yeah, I can't wait for that.
That's it. HC Wellington J. Knickerbocker, organized by Jumbo Jim Hemsworth. All for a good cause, of course, the outdoor Montreal 3-on-3 pond hockey tournament taking place Super Bowl weekend, but guaranteed to finish up in time to get me home to see the Falcons stomp whoever.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun day all around. I mean, I'm actually going to make my debut playing forward.
I'd like to see it.
Since there are no goaltenders, although this is one that I am fairly confident I'd be able to defend handily.
I'm going to put the over-under on 5 accidental glove saves over the course of the weekend.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to have to remember my cup, that's for sure. But, yeah, that should be a great time. Last year, I think they had 30 teams. I think they've doubled that this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, apparently it's you know, free Gatorade all day. It's going to be live music, all sorts of stuff. It's supposed to be really fun time.
Yep. Classy. And, of course, last year I was supposed to participate in the tournament, but we were rained out the original weekend. Hopefully that won't happen again. Although with these negative temperatures, I have a feeling we'll probably be okay. I think we may be in for one hell of a winter.
Yeah, it should be pretty good.
All right, enough of this talk about the weather. World Junior time.
I woke up at 4:08 this morning.
Yeah.
4:08. And I had to work. I went to bed at midnight the night before, woke up 4 hours later to watch Canada still stay in bed, I guess. I mean, it was pathetic.
It was bad. Initially, I should mention our apologies to the American viewers here, because we were a little upset, and viewers, listeners, nobody's watching us.
I didn't want to correct you.
To the American listeners of Off the Crossbar, listen, I'm really happy for you guys. I'm glad that you were able to pull out a win after starting the tournament a little bit slowly, but doing it at our expense, I mean, why don't you just go... yourselves. I mean, realistically, this...
No.
5-1? Really? Where did our team go? I don't mind losing to a better team. I don't mind showing up and losing 2-1, losing 3-2. Fine. We showed up, we played a better team, and they got the better of us. No problem, right?
Right.
5-1? And it should have been 5-0.
What's his nut?
Well, it both should have and it should not have been.
No, because the whistle never should have happened in the first place.
But it did.
And in any hockey league, anywhere on the planet, the whistle goes, the play is dead, it's not happening. But because of this silly European referee system where they just have huddles every 3 minutes and discuss how they're feeling about things and so on and so forth, they decide, hey, we'll give them the goal, they need it, we don't want to give this silly American a shutout, which he absolutely should have had.
Yeah, and you know what? For all the home cooking we're going to do later, hats off to that. Hats off to that opinion coming out of you, because this Gibson guy is for real.
Absolutely.
I mean, there is no doubt.
Top goalie in the tournament.
Top goaltender in the tournament, hands down to this point.
Although watching Biddington play in relief of Subban, had he been given the chance to play a couple more games?
It's a no-pressure situation.
Oh, for sure. And I don't have any problem with Subban starting in any of these games, because he was solid. He just, the first two goals he never saw. There were, I think, 8 or 9 people in the slot in front of him the first goal of the game. Next one was also screened. The two after that were weak.
If we're going to go there, I got to say, and this is essentially the post-mortem on Team Canada at this point. So this isn't necessarily about the game. We're going to talk about Team Canada's tournament a little bit here as well. I thought that what we saw from Subban was far below the standard I had expected. And I know that there's a lot of people out there saying, you know what, we went undefeated in the tournament up until that
until when it mattered.
The Americans. I think that what we're seeing out of Subban right now is that he is much more raw than anybody had previously thought. I think he's exceptionally talented. I think he definitely has all of the building blocks and all of the tools to become a high-level professional goaltender. But it wasn't very long ago that on this very show, I was in full support of the idea of Malcolm Subban moving to the NHL as a backup goaltender, maybe taking some minutes behind Tuukka Rask this year with the eventual intention of taking the reins. Not only after watching this tournament am I not certain he's there yet, I'm not 100% sold that he's going to get there.
See,
there are still holes in his game that are big enough to keep him out of the pro ranks.
Yeah, absolutely. At this point in time, yes. Given the correct coaching and leadership and guidance and stuff like that, I absolutely believe that Malcolm Subban is going to be a number one goaltender for any team in the NHL he wants, you know, to be later on. But as we all know, goalies take a long time to mature.
Oh, it's true.
And but I mean, you look at the opposite end of the ice, and this kid was cool under pressure, stopping everything that came at him. He didn't have that much of a challenging game, Gibson. However, he still was solid when he needed to be, and that's just the hallmark of a great goalie, is just being there when you need him to be and doing what he's got to do. I think, again, playing for Team Canada is just like playing for the Montreal Canadiens insofar as the moment you're given that jersey, you're under the microscope. There's an extreme amount of pressure that's put on your shoulders, and it's hard to live up to. I'm not saying I'd rather play for Team Canada, of course, than play for Montreal, because anybody who's from outside of Montreal thinks it's a stupid comment. But you have to kind of be here to understand the media scrutiny and stuff like that. So, I mean, a guy like Subban, he has tons of skill. He's a good goaltender, and he probably will be a great one. But I think he's not mature enough to have handled the pressure that he was under. Because, I mean, when in the preliminary rounds and stuff, Canada won 9-3, 6-3, 2-1, and 4-1. So they had some pretty high-scoring games, and they didn't allow a lot of goals.
I think once we saw those three goals in what was it, against Germany, that they allowed the three?
Germany at 9-3, and then...
I started to question whether Spott had made the right decision at that point, and I think a lot of others had. And I guess maybe the criticism here doesn't necessarily fall on Subban not living up to expectations.
No, it's a bad coaching decision.
I think, or maybe this comes down to we crowned him too early. And we, I mean all of us, and I am the first to admit my own guilt on that. When you see a guy who handles himself that well in the media, and you see a guy who's a first-round draft pick of a very highly visible franchise like the Boston Bruins, and then you see him...
Second pick in the first round.
First-round pick. And then you see him, you know, take that Team Canada jersey, be anointed the number one goaltender in a tournament that is known for producing star goaltenders. Maybe we expected too much too soon.
I think everything has been, ever since Carey Price got that position and owned it, it's been tough for any goaltender to live up to that standard.
Well, I mean, but this is a tournament that has that history of doing that. I mean, I remember being a kid and watching Sean Burke light it up and people thinking, you know, this is the next guy. And Sean Burke had a fantastic career, you know, as a journeyman NHL goaltender. And of course, now as a goaltending coach, he's doing exceptionally good things. But maybe in this country, this tournament asks too much too soon of some guys.
It asks too much too soon of a lot of them.
And it depends upon... I think that Subban may have fallen victim to that, and it may have been our fault. I'll be the first one to own the responsibility for that. I thought he was going to own this tournament. And I knew after seeing him let in those three goals against Germany, listen, it's not that he's not going to get there, and it's not that he doesn't have what it takes to get there.
He's just not there yet.
It's just that he's not there. And at that age, some guys are. Mm-hmm. And some guys are not. Some guys take forever to develop. I mean, not everybody is going to be a Patrice Bergeron at that level at that point in their career.
It's true. But again, like today's loss, you can't just pin on one person. It was everything from coach Steve Spott all the way down to, you know, friggin' blame it on some of the equipment guys even. The entire team.
I look at Spott.
Well, yeah, because he's the one who's ultimately making the decisions, putting the lines together and like that. But
a pattern.
Even our hero Dougie Hamilton had a crappy game today.
He had a terrible game. He had a bad tournament. And actually, I don't know if you're looking at my notes over here, but I have, with a big star next to it, Dougie was weak. And again, maybe I preempted myself a little bit. I was ready to say that Doug Hamilton was ready to make that jump, that he was good to go as an NHL caliber defenseman. After seeing what I saw at this tournament, he may need a year in Hershey.
I don't think so in his case. I think that he can make the switch to the big club by playing next to someone like Chara or really anybody within that organization, any one of their experienced defensemen. That's the sort of thing he needs, because he will be that guy later
but
on.
But for me, it's not, and again, maybe it's just what I was seeing. I mean, obviously, yeah, you got up this morning. I don't see Dougie Hamilton at this point being outsmarted on the ice. I see him, and I hate to say this, he looks slow. Doug Hamilton looked very slow-footed in this tournament. I saw a lot of guys who I did not think should have the ability to beat him wide. He got caught standing still on more than a few occasions, and that's what bothers me more than anything else. Defensemen, as we've said many times, take a long time to develop mentally. But I think that is Hamilton's strong point at this point. That was what impressed me the most when you and I went to go see the Niagara Ice Dogs play was, and then I know he wasn't drawn a blank now.
What, 67s?
Yes, thank you. Yes, we went to see the 67s play the Ice Dogs. I was impressed by the fact that he was never out of position. I was impressed by the fact that he seemed to be making the right decisions all the time.
I mean, it's easy to be impressed, though, in that case, because you're looking at the Ottawa 67s and the Niagara Ice Dogs, two teams which aren't at the top of their division or anything like that, and now you're being put in an international tournament where the best of each country, and that's the thing, and you're right, because
and the
that'll
best
carry
of each
over
country
the NHL.
Is not necessarily even good enough to play in the NHL.
Right, very few of them
And
are.
He was exposed on a few occasions.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes me question, is all I'm saying. Again, maybe he just had an off day. Maybe there's something there that we don't know about. I mean, there are a lot of injury issues. A lot of things go on behind the scenes in a hockey locker room that would never see the light of day.
Hmm.
But from what I saw on the ice, he looked to be a step behind.
Yeah,
but I don't
want to
put this on him. I don't want to rake Dougie over the coals.
No.
I like Dougie Hamilton. I still think he will win a Norris Trophy. I just think that this year in the tournament maybe served to focus the vision of a lot of Canadian hockey fans who get that tunnel vision. And we're in a lockout year. This is the only hockey. We just assume we're invincible. And we certainly learned very early this morning that we are not.
No, not at all. But again, it's not one person. It's the entire team. The whole group just didn't show up, and it was bad across the board. Even RNH played a pretty abysmal game. Can you think of anybody that stood out at all?
To be honest with you, it was just one guy, and it has nothing to do with the fact that it has nothing to do with the fact that he potted the only goal of the game for Canada. But I found that over the course of the tournament, as I watched, and I kept asking myself, who was that? I kept finding that the answer was Ty Ratty. Now here's a guy, first pick by St. Louis in this year's draft, 32nd overall. So really a sleeper, sort of late first round. A kid who is, believe it or not, at 6'1", undersized. The guy weighs 167 pounds, which is 5 pounds lighter than I stand at 5'8". And I'm not exactly huge. So he's got some physical development
issues.
How old
is he? 17?
17. I mean, the kid's...
He's just plenty of time.
Yeah, absolutely. And a very recent draft pick. But I really like the energy he brought to the table. I like the pop. I like the scrappiness. And that's what I look for when I say that every time I asked who was that, it was the guy jamming the side of the net. It was the guy getting down in the corners. three goals in the tournament, not a whole lot statistically from Ty Ratty, but I really did enjoy watching him play. I liked his energy level. So one of the bright spots for Canada. But, again, when you say that you look at a team that is not playing well as a unit, I think there's only one place to look, and that is behind the bench. So I'm going to look at the only grown man on the Team Canada agenda who held that kind of responsibility. I'm going to look at Steve Spott, and I'm going to look at the fact that he did not bring – that he had the most electric offensive player in Canadian Major Junior Hockey at his disposal in Nathan MacKinnon, and essentially let him dwindle away on a third and fourth line. Now, yes, obviously, he's a young kid. He's got more years in the tournament. There's a seniority, and there's a pecking order and things like this. But this kid is one of the best junior players on the planet. And to watch him dwindle killed me. When you watch Team Canada today crossing the blue line and desperately attempting to get the zone, there was no dump-and-chase hockey. None. At no point did the Canadians cross the blue line, fire the puck in, and go crack some skulls to get it back. That kills me. Instead, you saw these little flip moves, these little dipsy doodles. They were getting stripped in the neutral zone by a very, very active American Defense Corps. And they just weren't getting the job done. That has to come down to coaching. In the first period, they came out flat. They looked like they had absolutely no legs at all. And I saw an interview with Steve Spott after the game. And what did he say? Oh, we didn't want to, quote, kick up a storm before the game. We didn't go in there and get these guys all riled up at any point in this tournament. So we wanted to keep that energy level.
Yeah, because what better than having a dull and complacent team?
Yeah, I mean, in an elimination game against the Americans, and you take your first loss, and it's a handy loss. I mean, they weren't beaten. They were defeated. And they're smoked. They were run off the ice.
Yeah, it was sad to watch. I mean, I don't know, man. It's Steve Spott. He coaches the Kitchener Rangers, right?
Yeah.
And I think he's done so for 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. He's missed the playoffs once, and I think he's been out in the second round for the other 3 years. Certainly.
He's a very good coach.
He's a good coach, but do you think there might have been someone a little more experienced they could have asked? I mean, someone.
Well, there's 18 or 19 Sutters out there.
Exactly. So, like, why not? I question the wisdom of choosing him when you had such talent at your disposal. Why pick someone to do? I mean, again, hindsight is 20/20.
Maybe
right?
His Russian is okay, and he can communicate with the fans over there. Maybe that was the most important thing in selecting a head coach, was the ability to speak to people who have no bearing on the team.
That makes sense.
But again, listen, we can rip this Canadian squad apart. There are bright spots. Like I said, Ty Ratty kept getting my attention despite the fact that he did not statistically dominate. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is quite clearly the single greatest junior age player on the planet.
Yeah, I mean, he 11 points over or 11 points, 3 goals, 8 assists in 5 games. He had a couple of penalties. I don't think any were.
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, one of them was stupid. I think he took a slashing penalty.
I'm pretty sure one of the Canadian dads got a penalty in the stands. I mean, this is the way they were calling this tournament. Jeez. Is
the chin strap calls, the phantom calls everywhere. The stupid
and
goal.
To be fair, it wasn't unfair refereeing.
No, it was just poor refereeing.
It was just poorly done.
Yeah.
And I can't help but wonder why or where. Because, again, I'm okay with international hockey being called tighter because that's the game it is.
Sure.
That is absolutely just, you know, what is happening. And I'm all right with that because it's always been that way. But we're seeing hits that are clean hits.
Oh, the Kamara
shoulder to chest.
Kamara hit.
Exactly.
Again, no call on the play. No. The guy was injured. No call on the play. Whistle
exactly.
Down. The ref even said to Kamara, well, according to Kamara, the ref even said to him after, he's like, no, there's no call on that. It was a clean hit.
Exactly.
Once again, the refs have their little powwow. Boom. He's suspended for...
He took 2 games.
I think 1 or 2 games, yeah. And, you know, after the fact, he got a 2, a 5, and a 10. And it's just, what the hell?
No, there's no consistency.
It's pathetic. And I mean, I think part of the problem is the European referees. For the most part, they're Euro refs, and Canada and the U.S. have the reputation for being very physical and dirty, quote unquote dirty.
Oh, it is.
According to the European standards, and I think they were playing or calling particularly hard on them. That's not to say that other teams weren't getting crap calls against them too.
No, they definitely were.
But it was just pretty obvious that the refereeing, they said, you know, call everything, and they took them very literally.
And for the sake of fairness, I should say that I'm a big proponent of a physical style of gameplay. I'm a very hard-nosed, traditional, you know, Canadian hockey sort of guy. That's the way I believe the game should be played. And I do understand that when Nail Yakupov grows up playing in the Russian system and grows up playing European international hockey and then shows up in North America and sees what guys get away with, that's dirty. It is. I mean, by those standards, that is, I mean, we absolutely do. We play dirty.
Mm-hmm.
We hit to hurt. We hit clean, but we hit to hurt. We don't want to separate you from the puck. We want to separate a couple of your ribs from your sternum. But we don't want to separate your teeth from your jaw. And there's a huge difference in that. We want to throw the clean hit, but we want to throw it as hard as possible. Whereas the European style of game is much more strategic.
Yeah, I mean, there's a heavy reliance upon intimidation in the North American style of play. Get in their heads.
In a very real sense, Europeans play hockey, whereas Americans and Canadians play their opponents.
Mm-hmm.
They're there. They show up to win a hockey game. We show up to beat the other team. And that's a difference in mentality. They're trying to execute within the parameters of hockey. We're trying to execute within the rules of hockey. And there really is a difference in mentality there. And I completely understand why a lot of these European players, think that we play dirty. I get that. But you still have to call the game consistently. That's what I don't get. That's what kills me. Is when a clean hit delivered hard results in, like you said, a 2, a 5, and a 10.
Mm-hmm.
That blows my mind.
Yeah.
But enough of this. Let's talk about how great the Americans were.
Yeah, because the Americans were fantastic. Realistically,
the American World Junior team was absolutely spectacular today.
Yeah.
They were the team that Seth Jones promised us before the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, from start to finish, they played like it mattered because it sure as hell did.
Yep.
And they left nothing on the ice. They just, they played their asses off, and they smoked us.
Absolutely. Their forwards were incredibly quick, moved the puck exceptionally well. The defensemen, I am in love with the Americans' defensive effort this year because it's so amazing to me to see Phil Housley standing behind the bench. And then seven American defensemen doing their damnedest to put forth a Phil Housley impersonation. Because you saw risk-taking that I think is probably unparalleled in the time that I've been watching the World Junior Tournament. And you can only get away with that when you've got a guy like Gibson behind you.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because he'll let you... You can feel secure in pinching knowing that your goalie is playing so hard that if it does, for some reason, get back into your end, chances are he's going to stop it. Because they'd only get one shot at it. This guy was controlling his rebounds incredibly, and when a rebound did come out, you had a defenseman or two there instantly to get it the hell out of there. Usually with a nice long lead pass, someone like Galchenyuk, and boom, you know?
Well, that's
so,
it.
I mean, it was just such a well-executed and well-coached performance, you know, from start. Like, what did the Americans do? They beat, in the prelim rounds, they beat the Germans 8-0, the Slovakians 9-3, 2-1 they lost to Canada, and what was the Russia game? I think they lost 2-1 in that game too.
It was very close, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, offensively, and they were getting it from all over the place. I mean, who was it? Seth Jones had 7 points. Jacob Trouba had 8, 4 goals, 4 assists. I mean, you're getting a hell of a lot of production from your team.
Oh, absolutely.
And that helps.
Well, that's what we said. I mean, just so active and so unafraid to jump into the play. But let's talk about the little big man. Let's talk about, and this is an impressive hockey player at this tournament, John Gaudreau.
Yeah, he's 3.5 feet tall.
Put his 6th and 7th. Goals of the tournament into the net today.
Yeah.
I don't know what his stat line reads for the tournament, but he's up there. For
six goals, 7 assists. What am I saying? 6 games, 7 goals, 2 assists, 9 points, and he was a +2. And a game winner. And 2 power play goals.
So the guy's got 7 goals and he's a +2?
Yeah.
So he's not very defensively aware. He's undersized and he loves to shoot the puck. I like this guy. I like this guy a lot. Unfortunately, for those out there thinking that this guy may tear up the draft, 5'6".
Sorry, coincidentally, he also had the best shooting percent on the team with 31.82%, 22 shots on goals and 7 goals.
Jeez, that is incredibly efficient.
Yep.
I didn't realize that. Wow, good
on
him.
Not bad.
Not bad at all. But this guy comes in at 5'6", undersized by this tournament standards. Do you think even with the NHL adjusting its speed and smaller guys having their day in the sun, as it were, listen, and I've done these stats. If you are listed at 5'6", you are 5'5". Guaranteed.
I honestly, you know, the NHL is changing. But, I mean, you look at a guy like David DeHarnett. He's not much taller. He's been doing very well for himself in Montreal with two big guys on either side of him.
That's true.
And being a small guy hasn't really been that much of a detriment to him. I mean, DeHarnett finished, what, 3rd on the team last year in points?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, yeah, DeHarnett, 16 goals, 44 assists, 60 points. I mean, for a midget, that's not bad.
No, I mean, those are respectable numbers. They really are. But remember now, David DeHarnett took a while to get into the league. You got to put on some man weight if you're going to be that height. And start trying to throw your weight around with the Zdeno Cheras and the Alexi Emelins of the world.
Yes, but why not? I mean, he's still young. This is the World Junior Hockey Championship. He's 17 years old. So, I mean, give him a couple years, put on some weight, bulk up, and who says he couldn't be,
I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm saying you go down the list and you've got Gerby, Gionta, Darnay. What, Theo Fleury?
Yeah, Fleury was pretty petite.
I mean, under 5'6", and able to really bring their A game in this league.
Yeah.
So that's all I'm saying is that the odds are stacked against this guy. I really do. Like I said, as an undersized guy, as a speedster, as a shoot first guy myself, I really do hope the guy does well.
For sure. And you know, I really think he's got a chance. I mean, look at how he played in this tournament. He was playing, on the American team with big guys. He was playing against the Canadians, who are also a bunch of big guys, and that's to say nothing of all of the other teams in the league who definitely ice a bunch of big guys, or in the tournament, sorry. So,
I get into the same concerns that I get into with every undersized player, though, which is the wear and tear of an NHL season. So,
yeah.
And again, we're trying to predict the future. Listen, let's pat the kid on the back. He had one hell of a tournament. Deserves every accolade he gets coming out of this tournament. And from what I saw today, absolutely full-heartedly deserves a gold medal. It pains me to say this because, listen, I grew up down south as a Canadian hockey player. I really genuinely hope the Americans win this tournament. They deserve it.
Yep.
They have been, as of late, the most productive, the most entertaining, the most well-oiled machine heading into this medal round. I mean, listen, we talk about the New York Giants all the time, just you and I, you know, talking about football. It's about playing your best at the right moment. It's about bringing it when it counts. And we saw today on paper a statistically dominant Canadian team fall to a hot American team that was doing the right things at the right moment.
And honestly, I like the Americans' chances against the Swedes.
Absolutely.
Had it been Russia, I wouldn't have been so sure, but I'm fairly confident that as long as the Americans bring the game they brought today, they're going to take the Swedes handily.
I would like to see it.
I'm not talking blowout, but I'm saying comfortable win.
I think at this point, with the momentum, with the way things are moving, you're absolutely right. This is the Americans' tournament to lose at this point. And I do completely agree with your point. That have the Russians managed to squeak through, obviously home ice on a gold medal in a gold medal round gives you a huge advantage.
Mm.
But with
the Russians playing for bronze against us.
Honestly, Canada has to win tomorrow. They do. They, the way they played today, if they don't win tomorrow, then they shouldn't even bother showing up for the next tournament.
Well, I mean, it will be their fourth straight year without a gold medal, which here in Canada does actually constitute a losing streak, believe it or not. The bar has been set fairly high.
Yeah. The bar is always set high for everybody in this country that dons that sweater.
It's an
unbeatable thing. You can't get around it. As soon as you are given that sweater, you're expected to come back with a gold medal. That is the price you're supposed to pay to be given a Team Canada jersey.
It is, and maybe that's an unfair standard, but
no, it's not an unfair standard, but it's an outdated standard because we're no longer playing against pushover teams. It used to be that, you know, Canadians were the number one hockey players in the world, without a doubt. You know, the U.S. has been putting out more and more fantastic hockey players in the last years. The European leagues have been coming out.
I can't help but wonder if it ever really was that way.
We always used to win.
We thought that it was that way. But we were never able to send our best to the Olympics because they were always playing pro. So we always had that what if. World Junior, absolutely. That was our tournament for a long time. So maybe on that level. Anyway, so this year is not our year. That is for certain. I'd like to thank everybody for staying with us here. We're going to take a short break in just a few moments. When we come back, we are going to talk about, well, surprise, surprise, the NHL lockout. We are staring down the barrel of hockey's last stand. As I mentioned before, meetings going on in New York City. We're going to let you know what we think about whether or not the season will return, just like every week. Try to act surprised when you hear the answer. We're also going to talk a little bit about the Montreal Canadiens. But first, we have a very special treat for you. We're going to play a song here by a band called For the Mathematics. The song is entitled Latifund Ties, and I want everybody to pay very close attention to the backbeat on this one, as the drummer is the Men With No Name's own Mike DeRoche. So we'll be back in just a couple seconds. You are listening to Off the Crossbar Live, presented by FactSportsPage.com. For the next 3.5 minutes, you're grooving out to For the Mathematics.
Can mark, wait until tomorrow.
And welcome back to Off the Crossbar Live. You were just listening to For the Mathematics, Lot of Fun Tides. Nice work, Mike. Well done.
Way to go, buddy.
I like that quite a lot.
See him score goals, too.
You should see him.
Having quite the season.
He's having a hell of a season.
Yeah. He's only a couple points behind you, I think, in the points race, too.
Yeah, I believe that's true.
Not bad.
Been a hell of a year.
Yeah.
Hell of a year. All set up, too, this guy. All hustle.
Yep.
Yep. That's what I'm looking for.
Great vision. All right. Lockout.
Well, enough about guys who are actually playing hockey.
So the lockout has entered day 110.
We are on day 110. We are 3.5 hours away from entering day 111.
Yeah.
All right. So consensus is that in order for the NHL to play hockey this season, there will need to be a 48-game schedule.
8 days left.
With that comes a deadline, which is 8 days from today, as imposed by Mr. Pee Wee Herman, Gary Bettman. So my question to you is, given the fact that both sides have now exchanged official proposals once again, do you believe that there will be an NHL season in 2013?
Last night was the deadline for the NHLPA to enter into the
to officially declare the dissolution.
Yeah, the dissolution of the union.
Yeah.
They didn't.
They did not. But, to be fair, Donald Fair did not.
Right. The,
because the NHL
players gave
had
full authority.
Complete executive authority.
Yeah, the players gave him full authority to use or not use the disclaimer of interest. The thing is, it seems as though since that deadline came and went, the league has changed its tone and have gotten a little bit more sure of themselves and are starting to be a little more dickish.
Well, the players have once again filed.
Yeah.
To institute that authority. They will have...
But look at it from Gary Bettman's point of view, and he'll say, well, we called their bluff last time and nothing happened, so... I mean,
and that is exactly what happened, was the NHLPA said, well, we'll dissolve, and the NHL said, well, go ahead.
Yeah.
And the moment came and passed, and they did not.
But they had finally entered into what seemed like very promising negotiations. So, I mean, why would you at that point if progress is being made? That's the problem. So, but it's just...
What's wrong?
Yes, I think there's going to be hockey because there's just way too much money to be lost.
Yeah.
To not play hockey. They are idiots if this season doesn't happen.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, you're literally cutting off the nose to spite the face if you sacrifice an NHL season over this. I think that the sides are obviously closer than they've ever been. We keep hearing that phrase, but I actually feel like they're close to a deal. There seems to be some meaningful movement. The NHL has upped the compliance buyout offer from one player to two players after the end of 2013-2014,
yep.
Which means, you know, we could probably get rid of Scott Gomez twice if we wanted to.
Tremendous. We'll talk about him after, though.
Yeah, we will get to Gomez.
The second,
and actually, I will be much nicer to him coming up later.
Second-year salary cap. The players want $65 million. The owners are still holding firm to $60
million. Yeah, a little bit of separation there.
Split the difference to 62.5 and call it a day?
Oh, it doesn't it seem that simple.
Jesus Christ, I mean, or sorry. What anyway, JC, yeah, split the difference.
And contract term.
And pension.
Still separating them. The pension, I think, will be dealt with just because of the fact that today both sides had pension experts in. And
yeah,
they really do seem to be wanting to hammer that out. That seems to me as if that will be the next obstacle to fall in this process. I don't think the pensions will be a sticking point. I'm pretty sure it's going to come down to the contract term, and it's going to obviously just come down to who puffs their chest up the biggest at the last possible second, which unfortunately is a very real part of this situation right now. There's just a lot of ego there. And it sounds ridiculous to me to watch Hockey Central at noon, to watch TSN, to get onto the NHL.com website, and to hear these people talking about trust. And not in any sort of legal sense, not in any sort of tangible sense. We are actually talking about
a wishy-washy concept of whether or not you think the guy across the table from you is lying.
I don't.
That's what makes me sad. Is that the future of this game that I love, that you love, that certainly everybody who would spend a Thursday night listening to us talk must love, would come down to something as childish as, is Gary Bettman or Donald Fehr going to look the other one in the eye and tell a lie?
I think so. I think that's what they've been doing all along. They're blowing smoke up each other's asses. The egos are just massive. I don't think Fehr was originally
I think he got roped into this somehow.
Yeah, or got into a point where when you deal with somebody who's doing something just to tick you off, you can only be pushed so far. And I think it's very difficult to play a childish game with a group of children in a mature fashion. I don't know that it can be done. No, it can't. This is proof.
And I do believe, and I've always believed since day one, that the players are in the right here. And you can say all of this stuff about, you know, yeah, they're millionaires who should be saving their money and you know, should not have to need a pension because they're making millions of dollars. But what it comes down to is these are guys, as I've said so many times before, the average guy makes $650K a year for 3.5 years. So he's got that to make his living for the rest of his life. And these are guys who sacrifice the opportunity, in a lot of cases, to attend post-secondary institutes. These are guys who made a lot of sacrifices along the way. And people say, oh, yeah, you think it's difficult, you know, come try to be a bus driver for the city. Well, okay, fine. It is difficult to be a bus driver for the city. But you, overweight bus driver who works 40 hours a week, start working 70 hours a week on your physical fitness. Start having guys try to rip your head off. Start having absolutely zero job security from one day to the next. And do all that from the time you're 12 years old until the time you're, what, 25, 26?
Just
the average guy is going to retire at if he's getting his 3.5 year career?
You see, that's where a lot of people will jump up and say, well, they've got an entire life ahead of them to make money. Bull. Because from the age of 12 years old, whereas you and I went to...
They have to go back to school.
Exactly. Whereas you and I went to high school and then college and then university, got degrees, did all that stuff, worked our asses off just to get to the point where we can start careers. Well,
exactly.
You know, and then we spend the next 47 years, I guess, working if you retire at 65. You know, if you're making an average of $55,000 a year, you know, starting off with your crappy job, making 30 grand, then getting up to 80 or whatever, you're going to make $2.5 million over that working lifetime. These guys start playing hockey when they're little toddlers or whatever, start playing hockey seriously at the age of 12, work their asses off until they can get their chance. If they do make it, yeah, the superstars make ridiculous money. The average guy makes 650 grand a year.
Exactly.
If he's in there for 5 years, he's going to make a total of,
three and a half.
Five on the outside, $3.25 million. So, yeah, he's going to make more money than I will over his lifetime, but he's worked a hell of a lot harder to get to that.
Not by much.
And why should he have to work after that? He worked his ass off to get his career. It's just a
short tell you something. If you are in the National Hockey League, you are among the top 0.1% of people to ever put on a pair of skates.
The best of the best.
Now, if you're a city bus driver and you are part of that 0.1% of people to have ever sat behind the wheel of a vehicle, go drive a damn NASCAR and make your money if you think you're that good. Because that's how good these guys are.
Yeah.
These are the greatest. The absolute greatest.
Even the lowliest fourth liner.
Let me tell you something. That lowliest fourth liner, total up those guys in the National Hockey League. How many are there? 750? 700?
Thereabouts.
Okay. Total up the number of CEOs in the world. How many of them are there?
Hundreds.
Exactly.
Thousands
who, on average, dwarf these players' salaries.
Well, these are the guys that own the team.
Exactly. So my point being that not only do you have to be among a more elite percentage to get there, compared to the people who are in that elite percentage in every other industry on the planet, they're underpaid. Because I'll tell you right now, I cannot earn for any company, for any organization, ever what a Sedin brother can earn for the Vancouver Canucks in terms of filling seats, in terms of landing contracts, in terms of selling jerseys, T-shirts, bumper stickers, temporary tattoos, and popcorn in the stands. It simply does not matter. I can't generate that kind of revenue. And if you look at the percentage of revenue that these guys are generating for some of these clubs and for the National Hockey League in general, you find me a bus driver, you find me an accountant, you find me any person in any profession who is accounting for that kind of revenue, and I will show you somebody wealthier than the average NHL hockey player.
Of course.
Period. The end. All these people talk about free market and blah, blah, blah. Well, put your money where your mouth is, or remove your mouth from where somebody else's money is, because you have no right to speak unless you have a thorough understanding of what it's like to live that lifestyle and to do what these guys do. Now, I'm not here to say that I do, because the fact of the matter is I don't.
But
I'm not going to sit here and judge them for trying to make sure that they've got as much money as possible to leave behind to their kids. Like you said, you did the math. If these guys are playing 5 years in the league, they're coming out at just over $3 million, which is
approximately,
of course. And they're in a much higher tax bracket than the guys who are bringing in that $55 to get themselves up to $285 or to $2.85 or whatever. But that's just what it comes down to, is I don't understand. And therefore, I have to look at the numbers, and what the numbers tell me is that this is more than fair.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and the NHL is the top four sports. It's the lowest amount of salaries, right? Yeah. I mean, these guys every year every few years you'll have some professional sports league or other complaining about this sort of thing. But the fact is that for the most part, they're right. I mean, yeah, police officers put their lives on the line every day. Firefighters put their lives on the line every day. These people are absolutely essential to our society.
Sure.
Athletes aren't. We don't need them, but we enjoy watching them. It's a pastime. That cop that goes home after a long day of work, saving someone's life, whatever, goes home and watches the hockey game because it gives him, you know, something to get away from whatever he's gone through that day.
Absolutely.
We all just use sports as a way to escape from our regular day, everyday lives. We play hockey in a beer league. We're never going to make money playing hockey. We're never going to win anything significant, however, well, to anybody else. But to us, to win the DWHL championship in Division 7 would be fantastic. You know. And so these guys who devote their entire lives to doing it, to becoming that one-tenth of 1%.
Oh, absolutely.
It's on a completely other level, and they deserve to be rewarded for the amount of worth they bring to the organization.
Oh, absolutely.
And yeah, we pay too much money for tickets.
Well,
fine.
Put it this way. Listen, but I do my own taxes, right? Because I can't afford an accountant right now. Seth, if you're listening, learn this Canadian tax code maybe, eh, buddy? But look, when I sit down to do my taxes and I look at those sheets, I think to myself, all right, I just got to get through this. And I do. If I was the kind of person who could look at that and simply understand it and have that done in 2 minutes, I would expect to become wealthy from doing that.
Of course.
I go out there. I shoot pucks. You try to stop pucks. We're okay. If I had the ability to do what these guys do at that level, to fire wrist shots into the top corner from the opposite blue line, if I had the ability to go through six guys every time I touch the puck and get to the slot uninterrupted, I would expect to be paid accordingly for that ability.
And the salaries that they are getting is what the market will bear.
And that's exactly it. Now, the thing that gets me a lot is when you look at the National Football League and people say, yeah, these guys earn less on average. Well, that's
true. There are also 75 players on a team.
And there lies the issue. And their pension is significantly better. Because these kids know that their kids are going to have access to money when they want to go to school. These guys know that the kids are going to have access to health care when eventually the brain damage from getting hit in the face with linebackers for a living.
Well, that's the thing. Your life expectancy as a professional football player.
Or hockey player.
Yeah, but I mean, a football player especially, because of the physical toll of just the impact and stuff,
exactly.
Constantly. And these guys weigh 350 pounds of bloody linebackers.
And listen, I'll tell you something.
They'll still out-sprint me any day.
You and I both have a history of concussions, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we pay close attention when issues like this come up every once in a while. I read a fascinating stat. And you think these guys are overpaid in the National Hockey League and all these people at home that want to, you know, jump to these conclusions and say that it's just greedy players. They should just let the owners do what they will because that's the free market. They have, in all of the, it's been something close to 11 years now that they've been collecting brains from ex-professional athletes
who
have passed away. Who donate their brain to research.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of sports, they find instances of injury. The article I read, and I believe it was in The Economist from 2 months ago, reported that they have never seen a healthy brain come from a hockey player or a football player.
Jesus.
They've never seen one. They've never seen one from a single player. Think about that.
That is definitely a surprising fact. However, you have to look at it in context, too. These are guys, presumably, we're not talking about the recently deceased young lads from, you know, the Continental Hockey League, so on and so forth. We're talking about guys who played in the 70s, you know, goons, stuff like that, guys who, when the protection wasn't nearly as good. I mean, yeah.
I would argue that the protection may not have been as good, but the intent to injure was not nearly as high.
That's the thing. I don't think there's been some fundamental change in human nature. I think that... the game has increased in speed.
But I think when you get a bigger body moving at a faster speed, who has grown up watching guys collide on Don Cherry's Rock 'em Sock 'em videos, as opposed to listening to calls about Maurice Richard, even violent calls, I think that there is a difference. And I'm not saying that it was more or less dangerous in any given point. But I'm saying that the intent to injure and the aggression, in my opinion, has spiked.
I mean, there are definitely guys like Rafi Torres and stuff, the idiots, definitely.
Yeah, I think it peaked. I think there was a point where it peaked, and I think we're on the downswing of that now.
Yeah, I mean, with the Shanahammer coming in and really cracking down on stuff, there is a certain amount of respect between players. I mean, it's like rugby players, right? These guys are the craziest of all because they're playing football without any protection at all. Yeah. Some of them wear those little dinky head covers.
I think that's just to keep their ears from getting ripped off.
Basically, that's it. And I mean, these guys, there's a respect among players. Like every once in a while, you get, you know, teams that hate each other, and some guys will try to hurt each other. But for the most part, these guys aren't all walking around brain dead. You know, the All Blacks and stuff, they have the respect for...
I would be very interested to see the long-term results on them as well.
I mean, I've got a couple buddies who play rugby, and they're constantly hurt.
Concussed.
But, they're concussed. I suppose that was an entirely bad line of thought.
My point is... No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, it's a different level. Look, we've got sticks, we've got pucks, we're moving at faster speeds, we're trapped within the field of play, and we're going around on a sheet of ice on a blade of steel an eighth of an inch thick. You tell me that's not the most dangerous game in the world, I'll show you a NASCAR driver. I mean, that's, what else is there? other than getting behind the wheel of a vehicle, it doesn't get any more dangerous in terms of incident. Yeah, football has more consistent collisions, but not nearly at the speed.
Yeah, and you're not seeing nearly as much blood in a football match.
Well, that's it. It's blood trauma. And don't get me wrong, it's exhausting. It's powerful. Cool. Those guys will beat the crap out of you, and it is absolutely difficult to do. But I just think hockey offers the most potential for violent players. And when you see these guys that are willing to lay their life on the line quite literally, I just don't think there's any problem with paying them what the market will bear.
No.
I'm all right with that. I don't want to pay $250 for my seats. I think they should get more money off their TV deals. I think that there should be a better system, maybe. And, of course, as a fan who spends money on the game, I'd like to spend a little less. But for every dollar I do spend, I want as much of that money as possible going to the players who provided the game I enjoy.
Yeah.
I'm appreciative of the guy who owns the building and, you know, signs the checks and, you know, fills the popcorn stand. Like, I'm fine with that. And I think you should get a cut for taking that financial risk.
It just seems weird that one person or entity, I guess, because it's corporations owned.
Yeah, of course, people
should be getting
anymore.
50%. And then the rest of the guys who are actually
doing
there,
the work.
Doing the work, are yeah. splitting up the 50%.
But even 50%. Even that I'm okay with. I'm
yeah.
all right with a 50-50 split. I don't necessarily think it's the best way to go, and I do tend to fall on the player's side. But I'm all right with this. But then to tell these guys, oh, you can only have a job for this many years at a time, and we're stripping your pension fund, and.
Especially after a year
it's
ago,
difficult.
You agreed to contracts and all of the terms that you are now
well,
trying
it.
To change and affect. It is crap. Anyhow, we've talked about this well and enough.
We're angry about the lockout, if that comes as news to anybody. But let's get into some actual hockey. Let's pretend that all of this comes to pass. Let's say we're sit down
hockey
week,
on the 22nd.
A week from today, and we have the announcement in hand. The training camps will, in fact, open on January 12th, as was
that would be the best birthday present ever.
It would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Let's talk some Canadians. Because lost in all of the hullabaloo of the offseason this year, the extended, excruciating offseason this year, are some pretty significant moves on the lower half of the Montreal Canadiens depth chart, especially as far as forwards are concerned. And anybody interested in sort of checking this out in a little more detail, I will direct you to thehockeywriters.com. Check out the front page where my latest piece has landed, examining exactly this, the Montreal Canadiens forward lines. Obviously, we had a lone bright spot among the forward ranks last year. Well, three lone bright spots sharing one spread spotlight, shall we say. We had Cole, we had Desharnais, we had Pacioretty, and then we had disaster below that.
The bottom kind of
and
fell
the
out.
Montreal Canadiens. The bottom fell out, it took the middle with it, and the upper half was clinging to the edge. But heading into the season this season, we've got Lars Eller continuing his development. We've got Rene Bork hopefully acclimated to the hockey scene here in Montreal. We've got new arrivals in Colby Armstrong and in Brandon Prust. Things are looking okay up front. I dare say that when you look at the Canadiens on a four-line basis as they stand right now, they look pretty good.
I
don't
yeah.
hate what I see.
No, not at all. I mean, they're... Let's just presume that Patches, Cole, and Double D David Desharnais are going to have the same season they had last year. Great.
That's a hell of an assumption, but I like it.
I am going to assume because I believe.
You do. Well, give me your top three. If you are Michel Therrien, first off, sorry for labeling you that.
Okay.
If you were him, and the puck drops on, what do you say, January 22nd?
Yeah.
Who's taking the face-off? Who's on each wing? Give me your starting three.
I still kind of, you mean three lines or three? Yeah.
You're
no,
starting
no.
three. Who's on
I,
the ice?
I still like Patches, Double D, and Eric Cole. I like the way they played last year. They played very good hockey together, and I don't see any reason to break that up.
Completely agree with you. Give me your second three. Who's your second line? Rounding out the scoring ranks now, we're going to take a look at the Canadian second scoring line. Adam has got Eric Cole, David Desharnais, and Max Pacioretty as the starting trio.
Plek, Gionta, and maybe put someone...
You need a winger?
I need a winger.
You need a left winger.
Prust? No, it wouldn't be Prust. Prust you want to have on a big fourth checking line. I kind of screwed myself because I put Patches and Cole back together on the first line. They're both, in fact, left wingers, I believe.
No, they're fine.
Yeah, no, they're fine.
Pacioretty was playing the right wing for most of the
Well, exactly. That's yeah. what I'm saying. But as, you know, I like the cut of Moen's jib.
Yeah? Interesting. You and I have parted ways here on the second line. I'll get into my...
Well, originally...
I'll get into your originally. Pick your three.
All right, I'm done.
Give me your third line, then. So our first two lines are exhausted. We need a line out there that's not afraid to grind. We need a line that can shut down the opposition, but also poses a moderate scoring threat. Who are we putting out there?
I'd have Rene Bourque sitting on the left wing.
Yeah, I like that.
Lars Eller at center.
Mm-hmm.
And Colby Armstrong on the right.
Two out of three ain't bad. Two out of three ain't bad. I got two of those lined up because I blindly believe in things that hurt me on a consistent basis. And again, we will get to mine. So, I completely forgot who you had where. I know for a fact you've got Ryan White and Brandon Prust on your fourth line.
Yeah.
I assume you have Petteri Nokelainen up in the press box awaiting injury, which always arrives in Montreal.
Yeah, on my third line, on the fourth line, I had put White and Noki as interchangeables at center.
Okay, I like that.
Just because, as you say, someone will get hurt and
yeah.
they'll need to be
yeah.
shuffling. I have Gomer on the right wing.
Yeah, Scott Gomez playing a wing, eh?
A left-handed shot on the right wing. He has the ability to make plays. He sees he sees the ice very well. And he also hasn't been able to do a damn thing. So start him at the bottom and let him work his way up.
I'm a fan of that idea. I wonder how he...
You got to do something with it.
I wonder how
he
would fit on the wing.
I think
because Scott Gomez, for anybody just loosely aware of the situation, is a natural center. He could do it. I mean, I'm obviously play the left wing as a right-hand shot myself. I'm a fan of the off-shot wing.
I think it'd work. I mean, you got to do something with him. You can't just, as much as it would be great to mothball him, you can't. You're paying him too much money to not have him do anything, and until we've got something kicked in where we can just dump one or two players, you got to use the guy. And you got to give him a chance. Because as you say in your article, last year, he came into the season, or into the preseason anyway, in the best shape he's ever been in.
Absolutely.
Ready to go, ready to roll, had a great preseason, then hurt his ankle.
Yeah, and on a freak accident, really.
Exactly. And so he never, if he really was in tip-top shape and ready to play and just didn't get the chance, well, let him have the chance again this year. I mean, we keep giving the guy chance after chance.
Well, we don't have any options.
Exactly. You're committed to him, so friggin' put him out there until he starts producing, or take him out and back and shoot him like Gold Yeller, one or the other. But, So
I like that, actually. Some thinking outside of the box, for sure. I like moving Gomez to a wing. I'm not going to do it in my lines, but I like it. So we'll get into mine. I mean, when you start go to the top three, I don't think that there's really any option. If it ain't broke, you don't fix it. And you've got Eric Cole, David Desharnais, and Max Pacioretty, who have just been phenomenal. Yeah. I mean, up until the end of last season, you're looking at two 30-goal scorers, a 35-goal scorer.
181 points between the
yeah.
– 186 points between the three.
Which is fantastic.
Which is like 96% of the team's points.
But that being said, I've got an asterisk next to Desharnais because – I genuinely do not believe that he will be centering the top line by the end of this season.
Fleck taking his points back?
It has nothing to do with David Desharnais. It has to do with the fact that Thomas Plekanec is by far, in my opinion, the best overall hockey player the Montreal Canadiens have. And to have a guy that is that aware, to have a guy who is that well-rounded, very, very cool under pressure, never really flips out. You don't see him taking many bad penalties.
And plays in every single situation.
Exactly. And he's smart enough to play the power play. He's got enough hustle to play shorthanded. I really just trust the guy and like the guy quite a bit. I believe he will be the first line center by the end of the year. But we're talking about opening day lineups. So as it stands, you have to give the devil his due and put Desharnais at center. You have to. You have no other choice. The guy was phenomenal. He earned it.
I'd like to see a Cole, Plekanec, and Gionta line.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. I'd like to see that.
I think that would work out pretty well. But again, you got to get – they have to avoid the constant juggling that Jacques Martin was doing. If it didn't go well for a game, he changed lines.
It's got to take.
You've got to let these guys play together and build up some symmetry and just some.
Which is why I think Plekanec is the biggest question mark here.
He's the key.
Because last year, here's a guy who put up 52 points, which is a little bit of a drop-off for him, but he played on 25 different line combinations. That's ridiculous. It's ridiculous that you can make 25 different line combinations for a guy that talented, let alone that you would actually force him into it. So that being said, I'm going to force him into a very unnatural position on my second line. I've got Lars Eller centering my second line. I know that's ballsy. I know.
I've seen flashes of brilliance.
6'2", 200 pounds, and we had him at 23 years of age. He is still exceptionally young.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he came over as part of that Halak trade, so there's been a lot of buzz around the name Lars Eller for a very long time. And so people maybe feel like they're sick of hearing the name and like he's been around for a very long time without having done much. But he has constantly improved.
Yep.
And he, as a large center, is coming just into his own at the age of 23, 24. And so for that reason, I've got him at center. I've got Plek playing the left wing because of two reasons. One being the fact that he played with 25 different line combinations last year and still put up 52 points.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. You put the guy somewhere, you tell him to play, he's fine. He can play backup goaltender. He'd probably be pretty good at it. But also the fact that he played the left wing for the Czech national team.
With Jager.
With Jager. And did a fantastic job. Did an incredible job on the left wing. So I'd like to see him down there. I don't know that the NHL is as conducive to a guy his body weight playing up against the boards as international hockey is. So that could be an issue, but I'd like to see him try.
He's never been shy to go in.
He hasn't been shy, but that doesn't mean it's in his best interest. Going in there and getting hurt is ballsy but unproductive.
Yeah.
And so that just concerns me. And, you know, guys who wear turtlenecks seem soft to me. I don't know. It's just something.
That's what gives him his power, man.
Like, I hope so. It holds his head up. I mean, when he takes it off, I bet his head falls to the side like those African women with the rings.
Yeah.
And I've got on the right-hand side of that old consistent, old reliable, Brian Gionta, finally back after a very injury-prone season. I think he's one
he
of the guys...
He only had 31 games last season.
He's one of the guys who will benefit most from this lockout. He's going to come back rejuvenated. He's a guy who you don't have to worry about his work ethic when there's not hockey being played. He's going to come back firm. He's going to come back, solid and ready to play. And that brings me to, I'll be honest with you, the crown jewels in my Canadian lineup, I really like my third and fourth lines. I love having Rene Bork on the third line, centered by Scott Gomez, with Colby Armstrong on the other side. And I know, I heard a collective guy, I heard the oxygen rush out of Montreal when I said Scott Gomez on the third line. It's incredible that this guy is to the point where we don't even think of him as third line caliber anymore. Because as you said, he had some bad times, and I'm not going to sugarcoat that. There's no way to avoid the Scott Gomez stank on the last couple of seasons because it's been there and it's hanging thick, and there's no two ways around it. But there is a silver lining. He came into training camp last year, as you mentioned, as I've mentioned on several occasions, ready to go. He had a great preseason. He had something like 6 points in three games or 5 points in three games that he played. And then he had a freak accident. He had a little divot in the ice at practice, and he got a high ankle sprain. And he came back looking like a guy who was tired. He came back looking like a guy who wasn't necessarily 100%. And when you've had the seasons that he's had leading up to that, it's tough. I mean, it would have been tough anyway. Let's not sugarcoat it. But I like him in a third-line role. I like him centering a guy like Bork and a guy like Armstrong. He's got big bodies on either side.
Bork has got
clearing space. He does. And that's why I said you look at this lineup, you might see, like as I've dubbed it, the Island of Misfit Toys. You might see the castaways. You know, you see a guy in Bork who had a really bad year last year. You see a guy in Gomez who's had a bad stretch. And you see a guy in Colby Armstrong who had a lot of potential early in his career in Pittsburgh, was moved out of town, had some pretty decent years with Atlanta. 18 goals one year, I think 22 or 23 another year. And then obviously did not do very well in his time with the Leafs.
No.
So you look at that and you may see guys who used to have it. I look at it as a guy, line of speaking English tonight, folks. I see a lineup of guys who really has a chip on their shoulder and something to prove. I see a centerman with 700 career points in Scott Gomez. 700 career points. And a Stanley Cup ring. I see Rene Bork, guy who had back-to-back 27-goal seasons. And was on that pace not a full calendar year ago before coming over to Montreal and entering a slump.
Yeah. What did he finish with? 18 goals.
Yeah, he didn't have much. He had like 17 of those when he came over, I think.
Yeah.
So, again, a lot of guys there with something to prove, but with proven ability. Guys who – there isn't a guy on your – if you've got a guy on your third line who is the weakest guy and he scored 20 goals in an NHL season –
That's pretty good.
You're not doing bad if that's your third line.
As long as he can continue to bring what it was that got him those 20-plus goals. Therein lies the problem. It just seems as though especially watching Bork, I don't know if he's pissed off about being traded to Montreal or what, but he just seemed like he had better things to do. He wasn't putting the effort in. Armstrong, I honestly didn't watch enough of him in Toronto or whatever. I didn't pay enough attention to him in Toronto to be able to comment on him. And Gomez was damaged goods last year, but before that, whatever, who knows?
Like I said, I think they've got something to prove. And
hopefully they prove it with authority.
If two of those three guys show up and bring it,
it'll bring the third one forward.
Yeah. And then we get into my fourth line. And this is something I have been wanting to say about the Montreal Canadiens for a decade and a half and have not had the opportunity. If I was an opposing forward crossing the blue line and heading into the Montreal Canadiens zone, if I looked up and saw their fourth line, I would be terrified to go a step further. You're looking at Travis Mullen, Ryan White, and Brandon Prust. I've got Noah Kalinin on a regular basis in the press box because I believe in Ryan White. I think this kid is for real, and I wouldn't at all be surprised to see him playing in a second or third line role at points during the season. Because he is that good. He has that ability. But when you look at these guys, and here's something for you. Travis Mullen has 681 penalty minutes in his career and has by far the lowest average of those three guys. He's played 570 games. Brandon Prust has played 279 games, 612 penalty minutes. Okay, Ryan White's only played in 63 games, 115 penalty minutes.
As long as we're talking good, justified penalties and not stupid, idiotic penalties that are going to be to the detriment of the team. I mean, yeah, a lot of those penalties were that fine.
There's no stick swinging incidents on any of these guys' records.
Right.
These are all hard fought penalty minutes. I don't think any of these are for diving. I don't think many of these are for unsportsmanlike after the whistle. These are guys defending teammates.
Yeah, as long as that is in fact what they are doing,
yeah.
Then okay, yeah, that is a terrifying line to come up against.
It is, as far as
you know, getting your teeth knocked out, your head knocked in, and not getting past the line.
Well, that's it. Yeah. And here's the thing, Brandon Prost, not just a scrapper. Here's a guy who's also got second line potential. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be a top three forward. Let's get that straight. But you talk about a guy who has the ability to play in the second and third line. Absolutely trust him. Do you have any stats there for Prust?
Yeah, Prust with the Rangers. Last year he played a full 82-game season. He finished at a minus one, but he had 5 goals and 12 assists. So 17 points out of a role player.
And keep in mind that Tortorella uses his role players
only
sparingly. In their roles.
Yeah.
That's what he does. That's his coaching style, and that's what he's been known for.
If that's what you're here for, that's what you're going to do. And if you just so happen to get 17 points in the process, well, you know, kudos to you.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you look at other. I mean, you look at Prost, 82 games, I believe, each of the last two seasons. I mean,
he's been reliable.
The guy's built like a Dodge Ram. He's going to show up to work, and he's going to get the job done.
Yep.
All right. So that leaves Noah Kalinin in the press box, and that leaves a lot of people at home scratching their heads right now going, what did these two idiots forget about the draft? We're looking at Galchenyuk. And here's a guy, 61 points in 33 games in the Ontario Hockey League this year, having a very solid World Junior tournament.
A quiet, understated, but still productive tournament.
In so much as he scored almost all his points against Germany.
Yeah, well... Takes that,
and now, here's the reason why I don't have him in the Canadiens lineup. It's not because he is not among the best Canadian forward options. He is. He genuinely is. if you were just picking the best forwards to play for the Montreal Canadiens this year in their system, Galchenyuk has to warrant a good, hard look at making the team in a second or third line role. Most likely third. But why? Why am I going to take this kid and put him in a third line role on an NHL team?
Hey, we also overlooked Louis.
When he could be playing, Louis LeBlanc's not ready yet.
No, but and that's the thing with Galchenyuk. You got to let him play the first line minutes on the farm.
He needs them.
And develop, yeah.
He needs them. And it's difficult to say for a guy who's absolutely, and again, when you look at it, with Nathan MacKinnon, with Seth Jones, arguably, and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, arguably among the top five or six junior age players on the planet right now. But I wouldn't have him on my team. He's just proven himself to be slightly inconsistent, and he needs that maturation. We've seen it so many times on teams that are desperate for that next superstar. They rush the kid.
Montreal, the
Alexander Dague syndrome.
Montreal needs to take a very Detroit approach to this kid and groom him, leave him down where he can get the minutes he needs and really develop as a player.
Well, and the coaching and the attention.
Yeah.
He needs to be priority one for the coaching staff. And in the NHL, priority one is win the next game at all times. He's not going to get that here.
Yeah.
And let's face it, this city is hockey crazy. And not just hockey crazy, hockey deprived at this point.
If he comes up and doesn't score a goal a game for the first 2 months he's there, then
they're going to blow him off the ice.
Exactly. And that's just, it's not something that a young kid needs.
Absolutely not.
He needs to collect his, he needs to get his shit together and make damn sure that when he comes up, he's ready to come up. They can't screw it up. They really can't.
Yep, I'm 100% with you. This is an opportunity. And it's funny to say this kid is too good to bring up too soon.
He's too good to bring up too soon, but he's not good enough to bring up in the position that you would want him to be playing.
Well, and that's
relegated to the third line playing 6 minutes a game isn't enough.
And even if he was, like we talked about Goodrow earlier, you got to get on that man weight, you know? You got to be a man for a few years and get that 15 pounds that just comes with being a man. It takes time. I'm still waiting for mine. I'm almost 30. It's not arrived yet.
Unfortunately, mine came around the gut.
But that's what this guy needs. He needs those ligaments in the knees and the ankles to toughen up and strengthen. He needs a little more meat on the bones to support that talent.
Yeah.
I mean, the Canadians are not the Edmonton Oilers, where we can afford to just spend all our time focusing on our kids and developing them. We're a team that's got some 34-year-olds, got some 33-year-olds in the mix, and we're also trying to work in our talent. This isn't a complete
overhaul. And it's a high expectation.
Overhaul. Yeah, that's it. This isn't a complete overhaul of the team. This is a team that can't afford to be in a complete overhaul ever.
It's a
because
team
of those expectations.
It's a team that's undergoing renovations.
And that's exactly it.
Yeah.
We need to keep that structure intact. And I just don't think that we can give Galchenyuk the opportunities and the attention that he deserves at the NHL level quite yet. And he's too good to waste on a third-line role. He's too good to just let him roll in and out here and there into positions that we could maybe get to him. He needs to be a number one center somewhere because that's what he is. Let the wild horses run, and that's what you'll get. That's how you'll get the most out of Galchenyuk. I think when he does arrive, he will dominate, as long as we let him arrive at the right moment.
Yeah, he's exactly. Yeah, just take your time, do it right.
All right.
All right.
Well done, my friend. Well, everybody, that has been Off the Crossbar Live for Thursday, January the 3rd, 2013. We are, as always, are presented by BackSportsPage.com. And, of course, offthecrossbar.com. This week, a special mention to thehockeywriters.com for posting my latest piece. Go check that out on the Montreal Canadiens lineup. And, of course, to Mikey DeRoche for setting us up with some fantastic tunes. You'll be hearing more of Mike's previous work as well as some current work in the coming weeks here on Off the Crossbar Live, so be sure to check that out. Until next time, I want to thank everybody for joining us. You have just gone.
off the crossbar.